Good evening. WHO says the coronavirus may be just beginning. Governor Cuomo signs a slew of police reform bills, but why were most of the mothers barred? And the truth about New York's slave trading past. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Friday, June 12th, 2020. The COVID-19 pandemic is sweeping the world, even as New York and a few other localities report declining cases and states and nations begin to end their lockdowns. The Eastern Mediterranean, Brazil, Iran, and India report steady increases in cases of the disease, while the United States has reported nearly 2 million cases and 113,000 deaths. Dr. Tedros Adhanom of the World Health Organization says unless there's a global response to COVID, the virus will continue to grow.
No one is safe until everybody is safe. And that's why the unity and solidarity is important. We cannot fight this virus in isolation by looking inside and taking care of our respective countries only. We should think globally too. We need global solidarity to deny the virus any cracks, any division. With the increasing number of cases that we see now, we can say that the virus is actually starting, and it will continue to wreak even more havoc, not just lives, but the livelihoods. So that's why we need unity and solidarity and fight it together.
And that was Dr. Tedros Adhanom of the World Health Organization. In the United States, among the growing hotspots is the town of Immokalee, one of several immigrant communities in Florida. It's on the West Coast near Fort Myers. Florida has reportedly been slow to respond to 1,000 new cases in the town of 25,000. So the organization Doctors Without Borders sent a response team in April. Mobile clinics set up by the organization and a belated response from health authorities have begun to turn the tide, with hundreds lining up in the Florida heat to be tested. But even as the pandemic continues to rage, Americans have been riveted to seismic political events sparked by the brutal murder of George Floyd. Violent demonstrations have been replaced by widespread peaceful rallies and anguished calls for change. Today, New York State Governor Andrew Cuomo announced an executive order demanding about 500 localities deliver concrete plans to address racism in their police departments or lose state funding.
I'm going to sign an executive order today. Will require local governments and police departments all across the state, about 500, to develop a plan that reinvents and modernizes police strategies and programs in their community. They must formulate a plan. They have to address the use of force by police officers, crowd management, community policing, bias awareness, de-escalation, restorative justice, community-based outreach. They have to have a transparent citizen complaint disposition procedure. So if you make a complaint, it's not just yelling out the window. You find out what happened to that complaint. They should talk about appropriate equipment, what's not appropriate equipment, and any other issue that that community believes is relevant. That discussion has to happen with the community participants in the room. That plan then has to be enacted into local law. Every city, every county, it has to be done by April 1. If it's not done by April 1, and if it's not passed, they're not going to be eligible for state funding. Period.
Governor Cuomo. The Reverend Al Sharpton was at Cuomo's side as the governor signed the package of reform bills. Sharpton, who often exercises with Cuomo, says he was pleased by the governor's action.
So I was very happy to come to be part of watching him sign these laws that these mothers and these advocates and many further to the left than me would appreciate. But I am beyond happy to be here when I heard the executive order, because now not only have we made an announcement, Andrew Cuomo has raised the bar. And I hope every governor in this country will be asked today whether or not they're going to do what he just did. Somebody has to raise the bar. Then we can say to the Floyd family and others that you really have seen a new day and we've turned a new way in this country. And I think that he has done that. And Andrew Cuomo knows that when I don't think he did whatever, I will tell him he has gone beyond even my expectations. So enjoy these few minutes. Because I think this is a great day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Reverend. Thank you so much.
And that's Reverend Al Sharpton. Most of the bills have been before the legislature for years, never making it out of committee. But the outcry after Floyd's murder presented an opportunity to get them passed. Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says the laws are not a cure, but a first step on the path to equality. Among the legislation is a ban on chokeholds named for Eric Garner. It makes them or any similar holds a Class C felony. Another bill names the Attorney General an independent prosecutor in the deaths of unarmed civilians caused by cops. Yet another repeals Section 50A of the New York State Civil Rights Law that shielded the disciplinary records of police officers. The PBA says it opposes that bill as unfair. A new law demands demographic data on all low-level offenses, including misdemeanors and violations. The reforms require all police wear body cameras. And in a nod to the Central Park Karen, who's calling the cops on an innocent black man, made headlines. People who make unwarranted race-based 911 calls can now be sued. While Gwen Carr, mother of Eric Garner, who was killed in 2014 by a police chokehold, was at today's bill signing in Albany, the organization known as the Justice Committee that's been representing the families of the victims of police killings says they were locked out. Hawa Ba is the mother of Muhammad Ba, who was killed in 2012 by cops responding to a distressed person call.
They refused to allow the parents, the families, to be at the bill signing today?
Yes. Yeah. Justice Committee right to them and say their family suffer enough for this bill. They make calling, they make marching, they're doing everything. They can face everything on this marching. They deserve to be in front of you today when you sign this bill. It's their honor. Justice Committee say he said no.
Family members have been demanding repeal of 50A for years, including Carr. They've organized rallies, marches, and lobbying trips and have appeared on TV and in court on behalf of their murdered loved ones. Hawa Ba describes the death of her son gunned down in a hail of police bullets.
I decided to call an ambulance. My son's story is the exemplar that NYPD should not be first responsible for anything, especially for mental health. When they arrive, they look at me as an immigrant. They look at Mohammed as a black man, Muslim, named Mohammed. They decide to kill him. When they come, I tell them, I don't call police, go away. I call an ambulance. They say, oh, ma'am, this is the system. When you call an ambulance here, we'll come first. When we see the person, we'll call the ambulance. They walk and reach to Mohammed. He tells them the same thing. I don't call you, go away. They broke Mohammed's door against him, the NYPD protocol. 1 hour begging, they want to see them coming with shield, armor, heavy equipment, everything. I said, where you going? He don't do nothing wrong. They say he don't want to open the door. I said, please let me talk to him. The neighborhood come outside. I said, please let the mom talk to him. He will open the door. I sent two of my family to play them. They didn't listen to us. They shoot my son. 8 times. They broke the door, shoot him 8 times like an animal. Edwin Mateo, who killed him, took his life. He was having 5 complaints before he killed Mohammed. He's still walking when he gone. I truly appreciate what the judge and jury who hold him liable for my son's death, but it's not enough. Now things change. He might be having lifetime jail and taking his pencil because he jeopardized somebody's family. His family and life should be jeopardized also. We are family and mother who lost our loved one. We are not pray for nobody to die. Both have lifetime prison. Then the future will not face as Mohammed Ba faced.
Hawa Ba is the mother of Muhammad Ba, who was killed in 2012 by cops responding to a distressed person call. And former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin could receive more than $1 million in pension benefits, even if he is convicted of killing George Floyd. Chauvin has been the subject of national fury since he was recorded kneeling on Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes, killing him. Chauvin was eventually charged with second-degree murder. With calls to defund the police, pensions are expected to become a political flashpoint. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. On Monday night, police in Richmond, Virginia, got a call that someone had pulled down the statue of Jefferson Davis, president of the Confederacy during the Civil War that ended in defeat of the slaveholder power 155 years ago. No one's been arrested, and Richmond's mayor, LeVar Stoney, was less than angry as he tweeted, "Jefferson Davis was a racist and traitor who fled our city as his troops carried out orders to burn it to the ground. He never deserved to be up on that pedestal." He then asked the public for safety's sake to let professionals remove statues of other Confederates erected along the city's Monument Avenue. But on Tuesday night, a statue of Christopher Columbus met a similar fate and was unceremoniously dumped in a lake. In Bristol, England, Black Lives Matter protesters pulled down the statue of slave trader Edward Colton and tossed it in the harbor. In London, plywood was erected to protect the statue of Winston Churchill. In Brussels, a statue of King Leopold, whose policy killed millions in Africa, was seized by protesters and defaced. As the movement against depictions of slavers and imperialists grows in momentum, some are turning to New York City, home to thousands of statues, many of former icons now held in disrepute. Also, streets named after Confederate generals, even a tree planted by Robert E. Lee himself. Yesterday, Mayor Bill de Blasio addressed complaints about a street at Fort Hamilton named after Lee.
Nothing should be named after Robert E. Lee at this point in history. And by the way, someone who was supposed to follow his oath to the United States of America and the United States military and didn't. So on top of his many other sins and on top of the racism that he stood for. So, no, of course, anything named after him has to go in the city. I don't know if there still is one there. If there is, we'll appeal to the military to immediately remove it.
Can I say something?
Please, Deputy Mayor.
I just wanted to say that my father's family, the Thompsons, on both sides, were enslaved on the plantation of Robert E. Lee's father, Henry Lee. And one of my ancestors is named Sarah Lee. This issue is an emotional issue for many people like me. And it's really hard for us to really feel fully part of this country that celebrates our enslavement with names like that on military bases, all across this country. So I just want to say that.
Thank you for your statement. Thank you. And thank you. I hope everyone took in the fullness of what the deputy mayor just said. And I've known him for 30 years and have such admiration for him. He just said something that's kind of an American truth that needs to be understood.
And that's Deputy Mayor Philip Thompson and Mayor de Blasio. Few may know that New York City was among the centers of the slave trade almost from its beginning as a Dutch colony known as New Amsterdam. Slaves taken from Africa were widely held, sold, and buried in nameless plots throughout the town. When the English took over, they renamed the outpost New York, and the slave trade grew in numbers and profitability. The last enslaved New Yorker wasn't freed until 1827. A former New York City history teacher and current professor of education and history at Hofstra University is Alan Singer.
The global Black Lives Matter response to the police murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis has finally spelled a long overdue end to statues celebrating slaveholders and the slave traders. I think one of the most dramatic removals was in Bristol, England, where a statue of Edward Colston that was erected in 1895 was dumped in the harbor by Black Lives Matter protesters. Now, Colston was a 17th century Bristol philanthropist, a member of parliament. The number of streets and buildings in Bristol named after him, including the Rock Music Concert Hall. But Colston was a slave trader. He was actually the deputy governor of the Royal African Company, a company responsible for transporting almost 100,000 Africans to slavery in the Caribbean and British North America, which is now the United States. And another 20,000 people died on those ships just between 1672 and 1689. So people, again, all over the world are saying, this is enough. Why are we honoring these people? And I'm just very encouraged by what I'm seeing.
What happened to the Colston statue, pardon me?
The Black Lives Matter protesters, who are protesting against racism, recognizing the symbol of George Floyd, tore it down. They said no more discussion, no more debate, and they just dragged it through the streets, and they dumped it in Bristol Harbor. And again, that was very symbolic because 20,000 enslaved Africans were dumped in the ocean because of people like Colston. And that was just on the ships that he was responsible for. One of the great ironies here is that the Royal African Company was set up by King Charles II of England. What he did is he put his brother in charge. His brother was James, who later became James II. His brother was the Duke of York. So that New York City and New York State are named after the leading slave trader in the history of the planet.
So we changed the name of New York?
I'm not sure. But you know something? It's not. I don't think we need to change the name of New York. I just think we need to discuss what the origins of our city, or our state, and our society are. And that's what the protests about George Floyd and the protests around the statues are about. They're about finally recognizing the history of the United States, the history that created the world we live in today. The toppling of the Edward Colston statue is not an attack on history. It is history. In New York, in the colonial New Amsterdam, the largest private slaveholder was Peter Stuyvesant. And he was the head of the colony. And Stuyvesant was responsible for pushing the Dutch West Indies Company to bring over more enslaved Africans. And he was also an avowed anti-Semite. Slaves, yes. Jews, no. Now, one of the top public high schools in the city, as well as neighborhoods and housing developments, are named after Peter Stuyvesant. And I think there should be finally recognition of who he was, and I would like to see those names change.
Where does this end, though, the Trump and others claiming these Confederate statues and the names of these Confederate generals who were put on military bases somehow reflect a historical legacy or tradition?
Stonewall Jackson and Robert E. Lee, who actually have streets named after them at Fort Hamilton Military Base in Brooklyn, they were traitors to the United States. They swore an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States, and then they went to war against the country that they swore to defend. I don't see why we are honoring people who were traitors to the country.
The statue that's really coming under a lot of focus in the media today is Christopher Columbus over Columbus Circle on top of the pillar there.
Things have become symbols, and Columbus became a symbol of Italian-American identity when Italian-Americans were an immigrant group to the United States. So I understand what their concerns are. But Columbus has another symbol, and that is the genocidal actions taken by Europeans against Native Americans. I think that the Columbus should be removed, and I think it should be renamed. I don't think it should be destroyed. I'm not proposing we throw Columbus into the harbor, but I don't think it deserves that prominence any longer. So move it.
Alan Singer is professor of education and history at Hofstra University and a former New York City teacher. President Trump has come out in opposition to calls for changing the names of 10 military bases named after Confederate officers. More than 600,000 died in the Civil War, the equivalent of 6 million today. And daily Black Lives Matter protests continue every day in New York City, throughout the country, and worldwide. Arguably, Black Lives Matter is the most widespread protest movement in American history. A few days ago, WBAI's Reggie Johnson caught up with a group in Windsor Terrace, Brooklyn.
I'm here to stand up for what's been wrong for so long. Coming off of that pandemic where we've had time to isolate and have some introspection about what is wrong. And this is an easy thing to do, to come out and hold a sign and tell everybody that Black Lives Matters, everybody's life matters. And especially after hearing Al Sharpton's eulogy for George Floyd, that motivated me to make this sign, Time Is Out. And we don't have all the time in the world. We got it in three place now.
I am here because I realize at 64 years old, I need to get out of my comfort zone and have some uncomfortable conversations with people because I have a lot more to learn. And these conversations will help me learn and help me articulate the bias that I didn't realize I had. and that I didn't realize how much my life is benefited by the white privilege that I've had.
I, in particular, think it's really important for white people to make sure to stand up and speak out for what is happening right now in this country, with the leadership, with the police brutality, and with these uprisings. We need to really make sure we're out here being visible.
And that report from Reggie Johnson. What does police reform mean to the public? Even the definition of reform is controversial, especially the difference between elected officials who call for better relations with the police and activists who call for control of the police. Netford Freeman is a historian and writer in Washington, D.C.
We have to make a clear distinction so that people understand this distinction between community policing and community control of the police. And community control of the police is a demand or a campaign, or even if we win it, legislation that would take control of the jurisdiction over management, over deciding who is hired and who is fired as a police officer, what the duties and the priorities of the police are, the budget, where that budget is gone, what are the consequences of those circumstances, repercussions, if someone, for instances of misconduct. That would be a democratic decision by the community organized into different structures. For example, one would be a community control board, a civilian control board that takes its mandate from people's assemblies of the community, and that they would manage the police. And there would be aspects, two wings of the control board. One would manage the really day-to-day issues, and then another wing of it would manage the overall policy and priorities part. No more of the state controlling and issuing things and telling what the police do or anything like that, but the community itself would be empowered to make these decisions.
It seems like President Trump is almost chafing at the bit in order to start using this as a way to attack Joe Biden, to attack the protesters.
But we really think this is a question of power. And defunding the police can be, it could be, if not approached correctly and not really backed by more serious and radical demands and energy from the people, it could amount to just slivering the budget a little bit. Or, I mean, it could even amount, even if we're not careful, to things like we're seeing in Minneapolis, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but it depends on the consequences. They're talking about disbanding the police, which is something we want. However, the end result is we want the community to have control of our public safety, control over the institutions. And so if we aren't careful about the end result, we could have actually a situation where those with money, because this is what the police serve, they serve the capitalist interest to enforce white supremacy and capitalism. And so if we don't do that, then those with money will be able to hire police, effectively having mercenaries who are only accountable to the people who pay them. And then people without money, again, would be in the same situation we are before, maybe even more dire. Defunding the police has to be something that is, when we talk about power, something that's in the hands of the people. So if we have community control of the police, every other demand after that becomes redundant and unnecessary. There was a call for a national movement for the community control of the police, and various places will have to do it and be able to realize it in different ways. In Washington, D.C., we're calling for a ballot initiative. In Chicago, we know that they're doing it through measures where they have elected officials who are beholden to their platform and to their thing and are going to vote to bring it in that way. So because it's community-based and localized-based, it really is going to look different depending on where people are, but it has to be grassroots and it has to be about community control and power and not something like community policing or something less than that.
Netford Freeman is a historian and writer in Washington, D.C. And finally, the New York City Council is pushing to cut $1 billion from the NYPD's budget, a potentially historic turning point in law enforcement in New York City. The massive cut to the NYPD's annual $6 billion budget would come from removing functions like school safety and homeless outreach from the police, reducing the size of the force from 36,000 to 33,000 through a hiring freeze, and by not replacing officers who retire and limiting overtime pay. Council staffers analyze areas that could be cut at the behest of Council Speaker Corey Johnson, sources say, signaling he's on board with the proposal, one of the biggest demands to emerge from recent protests sparked by the death of Minnesota's George Floyd. Johnson's office released a statement formally calling for the cut, saying we should work to get $1 billion in cuts to the New York City's police spending in the fiscal 2021 budget. Other politicians have called for the NYPD's budget to be cut by $1 billion, but with Mayor de Blasio's opposed to such a big reduction, now's the time for the council members to walk the walk, said a council source. The council's budget negotiating team presented the proposal to members on Thursday and Friday. De Blasio's $89.3 billion executive budget revised in April in the thick of the crisis inflicted painful cuts on the Department of Education and popular summer youth employment programs while leaving the NYPD nearly intact. And that's some of the news for Friday, June 12, 2020. The news is produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson, who also contributed to tonight's news. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.